So, kind of the genesis of what got this project happening was I was asked at a special seminar with quite a few other people if there was something that I could do to help cultivate the conversation that I felt was missing in the world that I could be part of. What would that be? And how could I actually instrumentally do something? And not something like end world hunger, but something that was, within sizable within my grasp. And it didn't take long for me to realize when I was thinking about how do I synthesize what the issue is, I realized that we know what the issues are that we don't feel good about. We can each come up with those ideas, whether it's social inequalities, economic inequalities, pollution, what have you. We know the problems. We actually know a lot about how we got to these problems. We don't need to wait for more information, even though more information is still helpful, but we actually know how we got to some of these places, and we actually have a lot of the solutions. I'm not trying to make it simplistic, but there's a lot of things that we know that we could do to remedy some of the things that we don't feel that good about. And the other part that was missing to me was if we have this equation like that, what's the missing part? One of the things that I realized is that if we understood that our actions mattered, because I think we often think that if we don't have lots of money or we're not high on the political spectrum, maybe our actions don't amount to much. And I realize I've come from a activist, background, and I've been a botanist for a long time, and I understand the interconnections at play in the world. And for me, it's like I actually wanted somebody to make something like this. I wanted to watch it. I wanted to have access to somebody weaving these ideas together. And I feel like understanding this interconnectivity is a really important key. And then I was like, wait, could I be that person? And I kind of marched forward in it. It was a very small project at the time, and I thought that I would either be done in a year or I would know what my role was in that year. And it's been more than 10 years. So it along the way, and really I wanted the project to weave itself. Each time I felt way over my head, because of course that happened becoming a filmmaker from the get-go. Every time I felt like I was a little over my head, the universe would either drop money on the project. I would find somebody would go, I so believe in this, and they would give money to the project, which of course helped. Or I would have other people who knew about the project who said, please, please, please get this complete. So those were the, engines that kind of kept it going. And then as I kept going, I met these various people who were worthy of interviews to help weave the stories. And it just kind of wove itself, because that was my intention, was wanting it to come from an interconnected way. So, this is like, as the films show, we each have a ripple, whatever that is. And this happened to be the ripple that called me, at least for this moment. And so you just got to view the end product of it. So I'm really grateful for your attention on that.
Well, thank you. I didn't realize it had been 10 years, and I hear you have many more stories that you want to tell. So I wondered if you could tell us about some of the stories of people in your film. You start out with really setting the stage for interconnectedness. And could you tell us some stories, like about Alarian or how
So,
you met them and
sure. So, Ilarion Merkuliyev, the Aleut Wisdom Keeper, I met him because I live in Portland, Oregon, and I was helping at an Earth Day event where they had asked me to come and do some filming. They were asking a question, something like, what gives you heart and hope in the day and age that we're in? And there were amazing people that had come to this international kind of event. And I was able to be part of some of that questioning and filming it. And then a few people I asked if I could engage with them outside of that. Ilarion was one of them. He is a striking, amazing person who you should look him up. He teaches, speaks, does ceremony, has a wealthy background of all the marine habitat defense he's done, and he's from the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. He comes to Portland periodically. He was very gracious to give us an interview, and it was beautiful to go to different traditions. It was really important to me to see, to be able to show, this is not a 2021 way of looking at the world. It's ubiquitous across the world. It's across time. I think that was probably nothing new for people, but to be able to synthesize it in that way was really beautiful. To be able to meet Ke Aloha Peshota in Hawaii. I was in Hawaii doing something, and I ran into somebody in a parking lot, and I said, I would love to speak. I knew something about the Hawaiian concepts that had some interconnectivity tradition in them. And I just asked around, you know, where was there someone they could recommend? Lo and behold, I met Ke Aloha, and she was very generous in spending time with me and talking about her wisdom with that. And she's really an interesting person to look up as well. Each of these people, I was really committed to not interviewing the people that everybody else interviews. Like, there were so many people that I've heard from different documentaries and such that I wanted to speak with, but you know, sometimes there's just too many celebrities, and I really wanted it to be people like you and me, and you know, people in the audience. Not to say that you're not very accomplished people, but I wanted it to be non-celebrity oriented. I wanted it to be us. So I was able to find people who were very generous in wanting to share some of their perspective and such. And it was a real treat to be able to weave, especially that episode about the different cultures and spiritual traditions. I would love to do a whole film on that topic, but that's what we did with that one.
Yeah, you really set that up through different cultures and religions. I wonder if you could talk about aloha. I thought that was really, I mean, I didn't know that and what aloha means.
Yeah, you know, she was a very serious person and a very funny person, both. She had really deep spirit. And the concept of aloha is kind of like namaste in some ways, or, you know, like, it was interesting. It wasn't until after we'd woven a bunch of the stories together, I realized how essential certain words are, and that each culture has a word. Whatever cultures the audience, you know, members are from, I wonder if you can come up with some of that essence of what the words are that, you know, are about recognizing your oneness with others, or, you know, how it couches the way of being, of having kindness and care, you know, involved. And the part, one of the parts that was the most stunning to me was Anita Epulaf was the Mapuche wise woman from Chile. And when she talked about that word Inchekumafalen, if you notice that, well, these were of course in the Spanish subtitles, that was, you know, when I was talking to her, I actually entered the interview to be with her, and I was wanting to just speak to her, but there were five women there. And as a filmmaker, when you have one camera and one microphone, and then you have multiple people to work with, it's quite difficult. But she said, how can one person speak for their culture? She really needed these other people to come be part of that, which I thought was very powerful. I didn't get that comment on camera, which is why we didn't put it in. But I loved what she said about, if she said, I might be fine in my life, if you were to ask me how I am, but if my neighbor is not fine, if there are people who are hungry and having trouble, I can't say that I'm fine. So she was saying how, if the trees are joyful and the people are doing well, I can then report that I'm fine. So it's really talking about that interconnectedness, which was very powerful to me. It resonates in my mind often.
Wow. I imagine it was really a challenge to edit the stories down because of all that you have gathered from each individual person, because you had so many people.
It's true. And I was actually fortunate enough to work with a couple of really great editors. Heidi Zimmerman is my main editor. And she was really skillful at working side by side with me and really being the one who navigated the system and was able to do that. And it was great to work side by side, because that is, it is true that when you do film, you have so much more material than you're ever going to see as an audience. But, you know, there's nuggets inside of there that you want to weave to help build your story. And then I had another editor, Beth Siegel, who helped me with the pollination piece. And then a couple of other people as assistants. So it was, you know, it's a big process to do film stuff.
And have you made films before? Was this your first project that was born out of that moment? Or
this is my first project. My background is botany and herbal medicine. So I was a teacher and a practitioner and a scientist. You know, during that little story, when I said that I, you know, felt compelled that I wanted to help make that happen, I realized that I'm a good cheerleader. I'm a good enthusiast. The idea of connectivity is in my language. Like, being a botanist, it can't but help be that, because you see all the interactions that happen in. And so being able to be like the director, finding other people who are really good filmmakers is the other part. There's a lot of people who are crew for making film that don't necessarily have the story, but they help support the whole thing to happen. So we had amazing, you know, an amazing crew of people that came. Robert Constantino was one of the main people that worked alongside of me, as, you know, both in a lot of the camera work. I shot in the camera work when there was nobody else around, but and some of them came out really well. But I really wanted to bring in other people so that it would be not just a first year filmmaker. That, you know, it takes so many people to do that. So I was really blessed to assemble a great crew of filmmakers.
Wow. That's really interesting. So I'm thinking about so many pieces from, I mean, you wove together so many aspects, from dealing with, you know, pesticides and supporting bees and butterflies, the story of the teacher who had been inspired by Lewis Gibbs. Could you talk a little bit about that? She's one of my heroes. And I just thought that was beautifully put together to show how each one has, you know, this effect that can happen. So, and then the young student.
Yeah. So it was interesting, because Lois Gibbs is someone I knew about her story. And as you could tell, she's one of the people that's the epitome of somebody who can make a big difference by being an individual. She had, you know, a whole group of people that came along with her, but she dedicated her life to this, to making a difference. And so in my mind, it's like, she was like this example. And when I was going somewhere in my car and I heard her on the radio, and it's like, wait, Lois is in town? Because I heard that she was being interviewed in Portland. I kind of did an about face, turned around, tried to figure out, like, how do I find her? Called the radio station, couldn't get through, called a friend and said, if you were looking for Lois Gibbs in town, what would you do? He jumped on it. He connected. You know, he just was smart with doing that. He got me in touch with Lois Gibbs' handler, and they agreed to give us a couple hour interview, which, you know, blessings to her that this is what she does all the time. And she gave us that wonderful interview, and then she actually introduced me. I asked her who to go to for an example of some of the work that she'd done, and she introduced me to Kendall, the teacher, and the work that they were doing. So it was this very connected, follow the path kind of, excuse me, story that was very moving. And we ended up following them to the legislature when they were offering grievances. And it was just a very compelling, beautiful story to be able to share, you know, the idea of one person, but a community, you know, speaking up and making a difference. And some of the schools that we've shown the films to, we get this great feedback from students. I know that I've had like 10th graders who've said, I didn't realize that my voice made that much difference. I will know to speak out now. And as we know, we've been having a lot of, you know, we've seen that with Greta Thunberg and a lot of the youth who have been speaking out, as you know, in the last few years, where it's very motivating to realize that we do need to speak up about the things that we care about. And with these different episodes, it's really, to me, the idea is that if we can empower people that with these kind of stories, so that if they're character driven a little bit, then you can see yourself in that. And then hopefully you're inspired by it. And so, you know, the whole idea that we're trying to do is, you know, empower people that they matter, that your actions make a big difference. And I hope that we built that in a, you know, in a successful way. And so now we're just trying to get it into schools and in front of audiences, like what you're doing. Thank you very much. You know, because we're just wanting to, you know, just empower that understanding that you matter.
Great. Well, someone's asking about Lewis Gibbs. So can you, for not everyone has actually seen the film yet. We're still streaming it till Thursday. Can you briefly share the kind of the domino effect, or although I think more inspiring, the ripple effect of her and the science teacher and the student and what happened and the students, right? Yes. And the pollution.
Yes. So Lois Gibbs in the 70s, she was a mad mom because in Niagara Falls, in called Love Canal, Niagara Falls, New York, they realized that there was so much illness coming out of their elementary school, cancers, deformities, terrible things, and they realized that their school had been built on top of a toxic dump. It's an epic story. And it was horrible. And she devoted her life to, you know, raising a stink about it and really like going to the government. And she had, you know, hundreds of people behind her, but nobody knew what to do. And because of her commitment and her realizing that this was a very important thing and it wasn't okay for the chemical companies, like they couldn't get away with something like that. Again, this was like, she was the genesis of the environmental protection, Superfund sites. Thank you. And so before her, we, you know, like things like that just happened. Pollution was rampant and such. And so blessings to her and the people that worked with her, we, you know, have been protected in great ways, even though, you know, we see the pollutions that are still around us, but the measures are phenomenal of what happened. And so, and to this day, Lois, actually, she's got a, I think it's CHEJ. I think it's Citizens Health, Environmental Justice. Yeah. And she advocates for 3,000 different organizations, and she's always networking, and she's just an amazing soul. And, so you could tell by the interview that she's very engaged and she's very approachable and has quite the story. And then she introduced me to Kendall Jensen at Roosevelt High School in North Portland, because I think that's probably why she was in Portland, was because she was working with them. And then Kendall, you know, not everybody wants to be interviewed, but a lot of people, you know, they love to be able to tell their story. And Kendall was really open and let us come into her classroom. it was a small, like a science club. And they were very open about letting us follow them around. And because they were about to go to the legislature to offer grievances, and there's this organization in Portland called Neighbors for Clean Air. Mary Pavetto is the head of that. She's like an Erin Brockovich kind of person, or a Lois Gibbs kind of person. She actually is probably the one that brought Lois to town initially. And she works diligently and really, you know, dedicatedly to help mitigate some of the air quality issues in Portland and in Oregon itself. So, and then because Clarissa, the young Indigenous high school student who was very shy, was we were able to, you know, like follow their stories and be able to bring it into, you know, a finer story. And one of the things I love about what Kendall Jensen, the teacher, says is she was really aware that Lois's work came across her desk when she was in junior high. So she learned about Lois when she was in school, and then Lois came to her classroom. And so she got to teach, you know, Lois's ripple was giant in that sense of like, she impacted the teacher's hopefully impacting her students, and her students are hopefully impacting, you know, their families and the world. So it was this poetic, beautiful, you know, story of seeing that connection. So I would encourage any of you to look up Lois Gibbs, because her story is very inspiring.
The Love Canal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in a school board meeting, and I remember it was the head of the NAACP at the time. And we were talking about a cell tower coming to a school, and he talked about the Love Canal. Actually, we have that video on our website, and her impact has been so great. And I know one of the things that their organization does now is educate and give communities tools so that they can do the work that they need to do, especially in the social justice arena, just training people on how to take action with very local work, with grants. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what she's done with her team, and just really, so.
Thank you for mentioning that, because it's true. Her organization just continues to march on and do that advocacy work. So I, you know, if any of you have issues, you know, I know that your organization is, you know, working to support important issues, and also her organization is. So I would encourage any of you who are, you know, part of this audience, you obviously have this awareness about you. So, you know, definitely look up Lois Gibbs.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the chat a little bit later when I'm not talking, but so tell us about, we didn't talk about the butterflies and the stories that you have there. Can you talk about that and how did you, you're not in Idaho, so how did that happen?
Well, so I think I mentioned that botany is part of my background, and pollination is kind of my favorite topic because it's beautiful, it's alluring, it is so diverse and magical in some ways. And just this, it's miraculous, you know, the success of that random act, even though it's like a vital essential, you know, building block of our web of life. We, you know, being able to teach more about that, and it's is a calling. It's a wonderful thing to be able to talk about things like that. And to me, it's like the epitome of, you know, interconnection of the dance between the plant and the animal world. And so being able to talk about that as a way to see interconnections was a, you know, something I was destined to, you know, I really wanted to do. And because I know a lot about the issues of colony collapse disorder and how we get our food, and just the essence of how pollination is one of the most important things that we should all know about, I really wanted to weave something that was interesting so that it would make people be more, you know, intrigued in finding out more about it. And, you know, kind of back to what I was saying, the weaving of finding, how do you find people to talk about it? I knew the issues I wanted to talk about. And then I just started, different people would introduce me to people. I actually was visiting my sister in Iowa, which is, you know, an incredibly beautiful state, and found, was turned onto a bunch of the stories from there. Because, so one of the interviewees, Mace Vaughn, works for Xerces Society. That's with an X, Xerces. And it happens to be out of Portland, and it's like the best organization that talks about the data for pollinator support. And when I was talking to him about where is there a really interesting pollination story, he mentioned there was a story in Iowa, and it's like, interesting, I have connection in Iowa. So I, when I went there, I actually connected with the people from the STRIPS program, who they, in the big mega fields where it's just, you know, a zillion acres of one crop, corn or soybeans or something, where they've realized that they need to have more diversity in there. So they've taken, they've created these strips inside of these monocultures. Monoculture, for those of you that don't know, is just, you know, like this desert of just one crop. So there's no diversity. So they realize they need diversity in it for the ecosystem to be healthy and for the crops to do better and for pollinators to survive. So they have created these strips, these kind of roads inside of the fields that are prairie. So it's diverse, it's wonderful. And we interviewed, you know, did a little bit interview with some of the farmers and researchers about that. And then through conversation, found this wonderful young activist who had a mission to help the monarch butterflies. And you'll have to watch the story because it's a little involved, but it's amazing that the monarch butterfly travels thousands of miles, that little, you know, it's a butterfly. And in one direction, it takes five generations. So they stop and eat, they plant their eggs, a new one is born, and then it makes the next leg. So it's like a relay system. It takes five generations to get to these places where they do their summer stuff. It takes one generation, like one individual flies that 2,000 miles, a little butterfly, back to where it began. And again, this is not like the same individual that left that site. It's like this innate, incredible thing. And it was just such an intriguing story. So we found this wonderful activist who had a funny and delightful and inspiring story. So that is one of my favorite episodes that we did. And the other thing that we've done with these episodes, so if you go to our website, you'll see some of the different organizations that are working on some of these different topics, as well as other topics that if you're hopefully inspired to do good work after seeing some of the stories that we've woven, we don't want you to just be left like, oh, great, I'm, you know, like, what do I do now? It's like, you feel free to go to our website. And we have lots of places to, you know, that maybe you would want to work with one of those organizations, or at least find out more about who these people are or other organizations who are doing things. So we're trying to weave, you know, an inspiring mix to help you, you know, come see, like, if there's something you're inspired by, please don't hesitate, move in the direction of what to you is important, because your actions amount to a lot more than you can really imagine. And the pollinator story is kind of one of those fun stories to be inspired by.
Yeah, there was in the film, I forget his name, but he said, do what you do, but do it differently.
Yes, that was Fritjof Capra from the, he is a systems thinker, and it was very empowering to just start where you are. And as much as we think of that as an ism, sometimes it, when you really think about it, it's like, I don't need to be somebody different. Like, I don't need to become a rocket scientist to make a difference. It's like, how can I do it in my own life? And I think we all know, like, there's 50 things you can do to make, you know, help climate change from not being so tough, or how we can help the homeless, or we, you know, feed the, you know, at the food bank, or, you know, help with social justice issues. Like, there are little steps that we can each take, as the films hopefully impart, that do actually amount to, you know, something significant. So, you know, that what Fritjof Capra shared with that was very moving and inspiring.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a clinical social worker, and I've worked for many years. I'm not clinically working right now, but so many people now, and I saw the change over like the last 20 years, I think people are feeling really stuck and overwhelmed and in need. And when they become inspired to take that step to fix what seems unfixable. You know, it always seems like, you know, you can't, it's not fixable until you start taking those steps. Even if you can't see what the future is, it is so empowering to move when you feel stuck. And with everything going on in the world, and I think, and more, I mean, looking at corporate pollution, it's just more, it seems like it's just getting worse in so many respects, but people are waking up to the issue. Can you tell us about some stories of people who have been inspired and what they've done and what they've shared about what they've done with your film? Like what's moved them and what they've moved?
Well, we actually met somebody in the state of Wisconsin who thought that the films were so important for being able to help students understand, and you know, back to this overwhelm part, that we all get overwhelmed. It's huge. I mean, the things that we take notice of often are very big things, and they feel very daunting. And to be able to just, again, start where you are, there are so many things that we can do, and we all, you know, can find. You know, I love the phrase that despair is only for those people who aren't doing something, because if you are doing something, whether it's just, you know, going to the food bank and helping feed people, or being mindful that you're not going to buy certain things because you know that the money goes to something you don't believe in, or you don't like the packaging. It's like, buy things that don't have, you know, or that are, you know, things that you recycle, or voting for the right things that, you know, help, that have the future in mind. When we know that we're doing those kind of things, it's a little more difficult to fall into despair. I understand that, you know, like, we are in difficult times. And so I'm not trying to diminish that, but really knowing that you're acting in a, you know, to help future generations or your own generation or the animals, or, you know, that is, you know, there's pause for you know, like being part of the solution. And where in Wisconsin, the person who, his name is Corey, he just felt like the information was like some of the best ways to educate people. So he brought it to his teaching college. So we did 3 different conferences with different populations because of the ripple that he started. So, and these were, you know, not small groups. So because of the ripple that he started to get this information out to his teachers, so we were teaching teachers who teach students, who then, you know, kind of like that ripple that Kendall was saying, of like, there's this very tangible ripple effect of how it's helping. And so they really, you know, brought it into their echelon of the things that they're teaching, because they feel that it is helpful for the things they're doing, especially during this time of, what are we in the classroom? Are we doing virtual stuff? Is it hybrid learning? We don't know. It's like, what a stressful, hard time for students and teachers. And our materials, fortunately, can be used, you know, for in the classroom. If you're not in the classroom, they can be used virtually. Like, we designed them specifically that way. And really, I think that for those of you who've seen the film, you saw the 45-minute version, but we really built them into 3 episodes. So the ideal to me is being able to show one at a time, and then you can use our study guide or whatever, you know, exercises you come up with if you don't like what we've come up with, but I know you'll find something in there that you'd like, so that you can use in your class hour, use a film and have it be a catalyst for the exercises or projects or, you know, questions that we have helped cultivate. And then you could use that, you know, for the whole week or something, and then do another film. So, and again, there's 3 films. So we designed it really that way so that you could deepen with each one. And of course, the way that you're seeing it in this 45-minute piece is really fruitful and beautiful too. But just know that, you know, there's many ways to be able to work with this. And so anyway, back to your question of, you know, the changes that have happened, that, you know, there was a student that wrote and said, after seeing it, he said, I come from a farming background. I had no idea that chemicals impacted pollinators the way they do. I will forever farm differently. It's like, oh my gosh, seriously? You know, to be able to like have that kind of impact. We had many students, you know, respond with the ways that, you know, like just stating that if I, you know, the fact that I know that my actions amount to something gives me a whole other awareness about, I will, you know, I will be more thoughtful about my actions. So, you know, it's pretty stunning to be able to hear about those kinds of responses, you know, and just for that ripple itself.
We all, I mean, mattering, we all want to matter. And it's so, I just think this is, I know, one of the most important pieces to sort of finding your voice is taking that step and facing like the young woman who, you know, speaking out to all those elected officials about the air pollution. And
And you never know, like, will this go very far? Will anybody really hear it? Does it make any difference? And to me, the different stories that we hear, and I know, you know, again, I know that she's celebrity-like, but Greta Thunberg, for those of you who don't know who she was a young Swedish girl. I think she was 15 or 14 or something. And she felt really strongly about the, you know, climate change issues. And she sat in front of the government buildings, rain or shine, with a sign, you know, saying that, you know, we need to do something about this, and ended up, because of her standing there, being part of that, that other students congregated, and it, you know, she's become a world renowned because she's really, you know, helped bring people's voices out, realizing that, you know, if you just begin a process, you know, your little action, it might just stay a little action, but we don't have any idea. And even if it is a little action, it's, you know, it's substantial. The fact that you're doing it just even for yourself is important. And, you know, we influence others by showing, you know, what we stand for. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. It doesn't have to be political. It doesn't have to be, you know, like the biggest topic, but really, you know, it's down to standing up for what you care about and just have no doubt that there's, you know, some impact that comes from doing those things that you do.
Yeah, there's no question. There's always an impact. I know before I got involved in environmental health, I would have been scared to death to speak at a meeting. I mean, I never did that. And someone's like, well, you got to go to the council meeting and talk about the artificial turf. I'm like, council? Who's even on the council? What do I say? I prepared that 3 minutes so well. And, but I just knew some things just have to be done and you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And your organization and what you're doing is, you know, case in point for, you know, being able to, you know, you've created a voice and, you know, down to this event that we're sharing together, that you've created an audience of sorts, and you know, hopefully people are inspired by all the events that you do. I know you do a lot of them, and you know, there is that thing that even if you inspire one person, that is significant, and inspiring may go in the direction that you expect or not. The point is that it, you know, if I don't stand up for what I believe in, you know, then, you know, it's, there's that axiom about, if you don't vote, you're sort of voting for the other person or the other issue. That if you don't vote yes or you don't vote no, if my stance is to vote, you know, say you're running for office and I want to vote for you, but I'm not going to go to the polls. If I actually don't cast my vote, then I've given the other, you know, I'm sort of giving the option for the other person to excel. So I think that there's an important thing for us to show up for what matters to us, whether we think that we're going to, you know, change the world or not. It's, you know, that butterfly effect is, there's something to that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about when I first learned about the issue of wireless radiation, and I was feeling just completely despondent because I tried so hard to get my school and community to listen to what I thought was just so clear. This was a decade ago. And a dear friend said to me, and so she had a ripple effect. She said, Theodora, you know, right now, it seems like no one's listening to this and you're the only one. But she said, but I'm telling you, when kids see a new food, they need to see the food 7 times, or actually it was 16. It was some big number. And she said, and then they might try it. She said, so really what you're doing is really important, because, and I was inspired. I was like, oh, so I just got to get on this, because at some point it'll be like, oh, you know, people will go, oh, okay, let's go. And so that inspired me. And it was like, kind of like getting a recharge, actually, at a time when I thought that there was nothing that could be done, because I tried everything. That one conversation just brought me to the whole next level. I was ready. I was like, well, we got 16. We better get started. We got a lot of work to do.
That's a great story. And I would invite anybody in the audience to think about, like, what are some of the things that happened, that have happened for you, that was just a small thing, something that somebody said, or an action that happened that inspired you, that, you know, big or small, that it's really, you know, kind of fun, actually, to try to connect the dots of what made me who I am today, or give me the you know, the perspective that I have on things. And I think that there's something really, you know, it's much more fun to look at the world in an interconnected way than not, right? And I even, when I first started this project, I had someone who was a very smart, very dialed in person who owned a solar company. And when I was trying to describe what I was working on, he said, is everything really connected? And I just, it was like, tell me something that's not, you know, like, let's go from that end. Well, think about that, you guys. You know, it's like nothing stands on its own. It's all connected. And so I love to be able to be in those conversations where we see how things are interconnected, because it makes me have more awe even, and, you know, bigger sense of belonging, and that I'm part of something much bigger than myself. So I'm hoping that our films helped cultivate some of that in you as you've watched that.
Thank you. Can you tell us what the next step is for, I know that you're distributing it and you're working on educating, but you said that you have other stories. Are you going to be making more segments?
Yes, I have quite a few other segments that I'm excited to do. Within some of the interviews that we did, we even asked, you know, more questions in some of these other directions, so that we would have material down the road, should we be able to do it. And, you know, it comes down to financing, that film is not a cheap thing to do. And it takes a lot of people, and so should we find funding or sponsorship, we're ready to go. There's an absolute climate change story I'd like to tell that is just a little different than what I've heard in the world yet, that I think would be empowering, especially for people that don't necessarily think that they believe in climate change. That I think that being able to see, like, that's sort of like the biggest interconnected story ever, is like how well our planet runs because all the systems function. And when things start getting out of balance, like in our bodies, that changes. So there's a climate change one I would love to do. I'd love to do one on communication. You know, if we think about the way that we talk to, you know, how you talk to your kids in the morning, and then if there's, you know, like kerfuffle that happens when they go to school, the hardship that could, you know, be inspired from that, and the ripple effect of things in that way, or or how you talk to your business partner, how you talk to dignitaries and people in power, you know, like you could kind of go anywhere with that. But I think communication would be a really interesting thing, road to go down. I would love to talk about economics. And that's not a topic that I'm that familiar with, but I don't need to be familiar with it. I just need to find other people who are really, you know, like that's their topic. And so I'm looking forward to doing, I'd love to do something on biomimicry. There's many things that would be wonderful to work on. And so, you know, we'd love to find some kind of sponsorship or funding to, you know, go forth and make some more of these.
Can you talk about what you're doing with the film a little bit more, about how you're getting into schools and, you know, what, where you've been successful and what your next steps are?
I would be happy to. So we were lucky enough to get picked up by an educational distributor, Bullfrog Films, out of Pennsylvania. They are the oldest educational documentary film distributor, that a lot of the films you probably see at film festivals and stuff sometimes come through them as a distribution. And we were fortunate to get picked up by them. So if you're at all interested, you can go, we'll give you information how to find these films and other ones through Bullfrog Films. And so they have an in with colleges and high schools and middle schools, because I think you can probably tell that our material, we actually built it so that it's sort of fifth grade and up. We didn't make it super elementary, although at a conference, I had a second grade teacher who said she could totally use it for her kids too, just, you know, in her particular way. And so you can go to Bullfrog Films. They have, you know, they have ways of sharing it. And then I do presentations like this that different schools or organizations or congregations or businesses can go through me, and we can share this information and do Q&As and stuff to help empower people. And then there's a whole study guide that goes along with the film so that teachers then have some guidance on how to work a little more deeply with the topic.
I put in Bullfrog Films. Is that the best way to reach you, or is there a better way to, like, this curriculum, which this fantastic, so you have curriculum already, is that all through Bullfrog?
Yes, you can get it through Bullfrog, and they, you know, you can have access to it through them, then just by even looking at it. I'm actually going to, in the chat, I'm going to enter. Yeah. Okay, so that's the information for going to both our website, contacting me, and and there's a promo video, but I guess Bullfrog. So yes, and then you put Bullfrog in there. So you could go to any of these and route to getting more information. And again, if you contact me, I'd be more than happy to share any of this information with anybody. And we love to hear feedback and such. And speaking of feedback, it's amazing the testimonials, the impacts that have come back to us as far as how moving and inspiring and important the films are. So that is the whole idea, is to try to, you know, serve in this way and create that ripple and such. So I've been really grateful for that. So again, I'm really happy to hear from anybody about it. And there's the link that I put in the promo video for teachers. Please, anybody, just go to that, because it is actually, it's a 3-minute video, walks you through all the things that we have to offer and such. And so we made that as an easy access, an easy thing to watch. So you don't have to read all about the, you know, what our materials are, but it gives you a little walkthrough.
Well, thank you. I'm reading a few. I don't want to miss some of these thoughts in the chat. So someone is writing that they're teaching concepts in second grade and they never put that together with environmental efforts and campaigns. And that's very hopeful. And I look forward to getting this out. We are going to have this recorded, so it will be online. We'll also put the links to the resources that you've been talking about with Bullfrog and how to get in touch with you. And just keep in touch with what's next. And thank you. And And may this continue to ripple out.
Thank you for that. It's really a pleasure to be able to share it with you and with your audience. And I'm really grateful for the work that you're dedicated to doing. And your audience obviously is interested in that. So thank you, everybody who, you know, cares to learn more, because that's a big part of it, is getting educated so that we then know how to move forward. So please, again, be in contact with me. I would love to hear from any of you, or be in touch with Bullfrog Films. Again, we just want this material to do its work in the world. And we, you know, absolutely made it so that it wasn't out of reach for people who this is new concepts to, that the whole idea is to be empowering. And then if you're interested in any of the topics, there's so many ways to go deeper and move forth with it. But we really, you know, would like, if you know any teachers, if, you know, have ways for us to get it out to more people, I'm all ears. So please be in touch with me. And thank you, Theodora, very much for spending the time and showing our materials to your people. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rose. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.